Hello and welcome back to the Conflict Skills Podcast. I'm your host, professional mediator Simon Good. Gosh, I feel like I almost need to give an apology at the moment. I have been so irregular in terms of the way that I've been dealing with the podcast. I just have found it very challenging at the beginning of this year to be consistent. And so I've decided to focus today's episode of the podcast on the topic of how to reset after conflict, which I suppose is, I guess, resonating with me because it's something that I've needed to do a lot this year. So one of the reasons why I'm able to do it today is because I've followed the protocols that I'll describe in the episode of how to reset after conflict. And I've structured the way that I think about this topic in three different areas, as in this is how I use it myself. And I also tend to use a similar kind of approach when I'm coaching people on how to deal with conflict, particularly if it's workplace conflict. I've noticed that there's this bizarre assumption that we will be able to just relentlessly soldier forward and push through and demonstrate our resilience, regardless of what's going on at work. And it's just such a strange idea to me that this is an expectation that we should have of our staff. And organisations are obviously the one that has it of staff. And for some reason, people have just fallen into line thinking that, oh yeah, that's fair enough. Whereas to me, I think if you've got conflict with the people around you, like, I would expect all of the wheels to grind to a halt, you know? This is not an easy thing for humans to get over. It really upsets us. It really affects us. So if you're going through conflict at work and you're feeling like you're being pushed to just continue forward at all costs regardless, well, there will be a price to be paid for that at some stage. And my guess is that you might already be paying it in terms of a lack of sleep or it impacting your other relationships or your health and otherwise your general well-being, or maybe it's mental health. And I think the cost is often just put on the credit card and we delay it. We, you know, turn to extra cups of coffee in the morning to get through when we haven't slept well. And then, of course, by the end of the week, the ledger is balanced in some way. It might be just that you have a bit of a meltdown and erupt, or you get sick, or you're not there to support somebody else who you would normally be able to look after, etc. So I divide this process of resetting after conflict as the ones that I can use in the moment, like immediately after a difficult meeting, or I've had an argument with my partner, we've gone to separate rooms in an effort to cool off kind of thing. So what do I do there? The second stage I think about is that afternoon or that evening, what should I do then? I think that's an opportunity to spend a bit more time on something like self-care and maybe go and spend time by yourself, for example, or hang out with people that give you energy, whereas you can't usually do that during a work day or during a busy day when you're doing stuff for the family or whatever. And then the third step I think about is recovery. This might be a weekend or a day off or a holiday that you've got scheduled in between term times if you're studying. These are the opportunities where it's more about how are we traveling, like what's the reciprocal pattern here? If this continues moving forward and it doesn't change, where's that going to leave me? And what do I need right now to almost like set myself up and prepare for the next stage in the cycle? You know, I'm going back to study at the next semester at university, so what do I need to do to be in the right headspace by then? Or I've got 2 weeks off work, and what kind of activities would be the ones that recharge and let me rest and recuperate versus the ones that might be fun, but I'll be tired at the end of it. And maybe that's just something that's not ideal. So in the moment, it's often things like taking a quick break. I often use a phrase like break the script. You want to interrupt what you would normally be doing in this kind of a moment. So if you've just gotten off the phone to someone and they've been really upset and angry with you and you're feeling a little bit rattled, of course, you might have been in the middle of writing an email by then, and what most people tend to do is go back to the email. They can't do it, by the way. Your brain is not in the same state as it was 5 minutes before. You've got a higher level of cortisol. Your brain is literally in more short-term survival focus versus long-term rational think things through in a very considered kind of way. So you won't be able to find the right words. You'll be more likely to misinterpret what the client has written to you in their email. You'll be more likely to miss something or make a mistake. So ironically, if you just take 2 minutes to go and make a cup of tea and then come back, you're actually going to do a better job and get the email done in a quicker time frame. But we think that must push through, must finish the email type of thing. And this almost is a product of our brain not being aware fully of what's going on, including just how worked up we're probably feeling. So take a break, and I often reckon get something to eat or have a drink. Those two things are cues that our body uses to detect whether or not we're in a safe, stable environment. It balances our blood sugar, etc. You know, our stomach has something to process. It's just a helpful way of interrupting that survival brain, survival pattern that you might be shifting into, even subconsciously. Going for a walk or moving, stretching, shaking your limbs, like just physically shaking your arms as hard as you can, stamping your feet on the ground. All of this is a way of dealing with some of the buildup of kinetic energy, the adrenaline buildup that's going on inside your body. You know, we use that term fight or flight mode. Our survival brain is often looking to get us out of our current situation. So it's getting ready to act. Like literally, our heart rate increases to pump blood, which gives oxygen to our muscles, etc. So we've got that buildup of energy now, and our option is to just think that we can push through and ignore it. Like we're robots, a disembodied brain acting and doing our work, quote unquote. Or we could recognize that our brain and our body are connected, inherently influencing each other. So anything that I can do to calm down my body is going to help me to think more clearly. So going for a quick walk around the building is literally the best thing that I can do for my productivity. I find it really still challenging thinking about back when I worked for an organization and I wasn't allowed to just stand up and go for a walk without explaining myself. I still am surprised almost at the fact that I put up with that for as long as I did, because I don't believe that's how we should live. Like, it's just not one of my values that I should need to ask permission from another grown-up to go for a walk around the building. But I know there's just so many jobs that people are in where, of course, you can't just have the freedom to go and do that. And the challenge there is that let's imagine that you have to go and say to your boss, I'm just going to go for a quick walk. Your boss is going to say, oh, are you okay? And you're probably thinking, yep, fine. I just need to deal with the physical stuff, right? I don't want to get into a counseling or debriefing conversation. It's like, yeah, no worries. Just had a pretty full-on conversation. And your boss is probably the kind of person that's like, what happened? You know, in a caring way. But I just think this is so unhelpful. These well-intentioned managers, and I was one, by the way, I would want to be caring and check in with my staff back in the old days. And in hindsight, I reckon I should have just been a lot more hands-off and recognized people's autonomy and independence, but at the same time, opening the door that they could come to me when they needed support. I don't know, I wonder what your take is on all of these kind of things. And interestingly, this is all values. This is my subjective opinion. And looking back, a lot of the conflict that I would get in with my employer, like, you know, my boss that wanted me to tell them when I wanted to go for a walk, and I would say, why, are you serious? Like, I'm an adult. Oh, it's because of insurance or something like that. And you know, you can kind of imagine the debates that I would get into in with the HR team in all of the different positions that I've been in. I think as I got more authority, like I was promoted to management positions and executive leadership, etc., they might have been surprised a little bit of why I was still getting in an argument about why can't we just approve this to staff without needing a senior manager's approval, etc. Because it was just honestly like autonomy and independence and respecting people as autonomous human beings is something that I really care about. And so when that was interrupted, like my boss saying, are you okay? What's happened? It was interesting the layers of buttons that would get pushed or the layers of connected triggers for me. Because I was already a bit worked up from that phone call that I just had with the client. And now my boss is adding another trigger to me, which is restricting my freedom or whatever, however you'd like to think about that. And so all of a sudden my boss would cop a reaction that was far stronger than they expected because they weren't aware of that buildup of stress that was going on for me. So going for a walk or shaking or stretching or doing 10 push-ups or, you know, a few star jumps or something, it's about releasing some of that physical buildup so that it doesn't trickle into other conflicts or other situations or other communication that you're about to engage in. A lot of people also find it helpful to have some type of an emotional release as well. I've heard a really lovely technique of wetting a small towel, and then throwing it at the ground as hard as you can and swearing or yelling or crying, just going to somewhere private, like sitting in your car and having a cry, or just journaling, like writing down everything that's on your brain and what you want to say and what you wish that you could say. Or sometimes doing something that's a little bit more abstract. Like I like music, so sometimes I'll just play a song and I'll try and play what I'm feeling, which sounds really goofy, and sometimes I just don't really get it and it annoys me so much that I just stop, put it down and go and do something else. But sometimes I almost notice it is like turning on the tap and letting the water flow in terms of like I'm getting it out. I don't know if that makes any sense if you're someone who doesn't play music, but you know, you sort of get into this flow state sometimes where you can play without really thinking about what you're going to play next. And I often think about that. I wonder where that note then comes from. If I didn't decide to do it, then I suppose just if we think about ourselves as a biological being, part of our brain must have processed it without my awareness. And I've noticed that that can be really helpful. And so it wouldn't surprise me if we are clearing some type of a neurological block or something, or rewiring the sets of neurons that are connected to this particular memory or something. Like I think all of these types of phenomenons we could explain at any level that we decide to. Like we could drill down to the neurons and the cells that are firing, etc. But I also think we could probably almost zoom out and think, wow, this is a real theme that I've been dealing with in my life, and you know, me not taking the time to prioritize myself and this conflict of values that I'm engaged in. I wonder if it's actually impacting more than I think. And then, of course, you could zoom out again if you have some type of a religious or theological belief, or even in quantum physics type of language, that you could say that maybe there's different dimensional beings that are acting through us, or, you know, we've just caught the shadow of some other being that we can't detect that might be passing by, a little bit like an ant gets pushed by the wind from a truck, but it has no idea of the fact that the truck, what a truck is, you know, to an ant. It's just, oh my goodness, my food just blew away, I better go and get it. I don't even necessarily think that it matters which level you think about these types of things. It all presents an opportunity to engage with it in a productive way to me. So I don't really mind when people think about, you know, they use a spiritual type of language, if you know what I mean, or they're very data focused and science focused. I think predominantly all of the ways that we think about problems indicate the same set of options that we could use to deal with it. So screaming and wetting a tea towel and throwing it at the ground, I'm fully aware that it seems completely ridiculous. And when I use phrases like emotional release or all this type of stuff, there'll be a portion of the listeners, and certainly when I do training workshops, you know, I've seen my fair share of 60-year-old concreters crossing their arms in front of me when I'm talking about something like mindfulness. But it's interesting that the person sitting next to them, the next 60-year-old concreter covered in tattoos, looking at me, is often nodding and writing it down, and they'll say something like, yeah, I've used this breathing technique or whatever. So I'm encouraged by all of that. I can see that there's a shift that's starting to happen, and I think it's probably happening at all of those different levels, you know, the science and the quantum physics and the psychology is meeting the sociology, and the almost like mental health can't keep existing in a vacuum without some acknowledgement of meaning. And whether you call that God or spirituality or something, or just purpose that people need to live their life, or what's our identity, or, you know, what do we think as humans? Should they be autonomous beings, etc.? All of these things are kind of starting to play out, I think, in a systematic change, which at least to me seems really encouraging, because gosh, I think people are being mistreated by organizations across the board at the moment. So a quick debrief is something that's helpful, but the challenge is at work that you might not have someone who's actually a particularly good listener. So I don't mind drafting an email or even just talking to a voice recording or something sometimes, but there are counseling services that have on-call type of appointments that you could use. So in some situations, if it's really affected you, that might be something that you could consider as well. And what is typically described in a debriefing, for example, is that contemporaneous debriefing is helpful, so as close, as soon after the event as possible. And I suspect that's because the way that our memories work is that we re-engage with them and then almost add another layer of meaning on top of what actually happened. If we thought that the person had been unreasonable, then when we're remembering the conversation, we're going to particularly remember the parts that stood out to us where they were being unreasonable, and we'll pay less attention to the stuff that they said in between, which might have been more reasonable, so to speak. And so as those layers of meaning get added on top, of course, they become more black and white, and we then might feel even stronger in hindsight that they really were being unreasonable. The more I think about it, gosh, they're a jerk, and this isn't the first time they've done it. Whereas if we can have a debrief immediately after the event, it tends to be more detail-focused, data-focused, and then neutral as a result. And that then helps us not to take it as personally, because we can see it in this more objective way where we create a bit of distance between ourselves and the events that happened, or ourselves and our emotional reaction, or ourselves and our initial take on the situation and understanding that we've come up with. So the second area that you might think about of how to reset after conflict is that evening and that night. And this is about self-awareness and then thinking about the options that will help meet your needs. So recognizing when your energy is low. If you've just had conflict, there's a real draining element to it. And so you might not want to organize to spend a whole bunch of time with your family that night. You might, like maybe that's something that you really love doing, watching a show together or playing a game or something or going to this place. But if you're stressed and frazzled, at least for me, I know that there's a very high likelihood that I'm going to snap at someone and get really grumpy. And to be honest, probably ruin the whole thing. So it would be much better to have a shorter interaction where I can hold it together and be positive for the whole time. So instead of going out for dinner, how about we just cook something quickly and then, you know, have a nice dessert or something like that. But we don't actually spend as much time hanging out as we normally would, simply because I'd prefer to have a short positive experience rather than a longer and more in-depth and more exciting or whatever. One where I don't enjoy it and I'm grumpy and I probably start to affect other people as well. Don't trust your perceptions in that state. When you're in that low energy, the rough energy, if you know what I mean, you're a bit more irritable, you're a bit more grumpy, you tend to catastrophize, you look more negatively on things that are happening. You can't trust your perceptions because your perception is influenced by how you're feeling at the time, and how you're feeling at the time is influenced by your memories of what happened, right? As well as your physiological state. And so both of those two things are adding noise into the picture. It's like a photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy. So when I'm feeling particularly stressed and frazzled, I almost think that my view of what's going on right now is also a photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy. Or I've got dusty glasses that I'm looking through, or it's a mirror that's slightly distorted, like one of those funhouse mirrors. The challenge there is I don't really know what's going on, but I just need to remind myself about that, which means that I don't jump in wholeheartedly, look before you leap type of thing. Let me just clarify that they actually meant that before I respond in this grumpy way. I can't always do it, but what I'm aiming for is space. So I suppose it's that initially. It might just be space, giving yourself time out, giving yourself 10 minutes to go and sit in a room and just think about how you're feeling and focus on that as a way of processing it. And choose activities that help you refresh and find balance. If you've worked in a really physically demanding job all day, then it might be just sitting down on the couch and watching Netflix. If your job is more intellectual and you've been in an office environment, then maybe running in a treadmill or going to the gym or something would be what works for you. I think, though, the common elements tend to be something that you enjoy, like we want to feel good. It's often something that's creative, where we get to add something to it. It's sometimes a process that has structure, where we don't need to think too much about what's going on. Like it's a meal that we've cooked 100 times before, so it's not stressful. We're pretty sure it's going to turn out okay. And that might be something that I need if I've really drained my creative juices, so to speak, through the day. So particularly when the situation's after conflict, all of this will be just amplified. Whichever one of your types of energy is being drained, then that will be drained even more so. And so the risk is that if you don't look after yourself, then it might create some type of a negative spiral, whether that's you and your relationships with other people and you're grumpy and then they get a bit defensive with you and then you misinterpret that and here we go, we're off to the races again. Or it might be something to do with your well-being, like you don't sleep well and then the next day you're even more irritable and things don't go well again when you're talking to that difficult client or whatever. And then the final stage that you might think about is recovery. This is often about, again, figuring out what do you need and finding ways of restoring your energy. So I'm not too woo-woo, you know, there's energy flowing through us at all times, etc. Although I am finding all of those ways of thinking about the world a lot more appealing, I have to say, as I get older and learn about some of the different philosophical underpinnings of, esoteric wisdom, etc. So the ways of type restoring energy in your energy chakras, etc. I know there are a lot of people who are fully invested in that way of understanding the world, and I think that inherently often gives us a lot of cues around what we need. But even if you're just more of a, you know, I normally come home and have three beers and a meat pie and that's what makes me feel better kind of person, and you're a concreter that's got their arms crossed in one of my workshops, well, then just think about, do you feel like hanging out with people, or do you think you feel like being by yourself? How's your energy level? Do you feel like having food? What kind of food do you reckon would be helpful? That's interesting. You feel like having beer. What do you think that's about? Is that helping you calm down, or do you feel like you need to switch off? Or is that something about the sugar? And so maybe, you know, having a few bananas and then going to the gym or something would get you to the same place in the end. Or maybe it's just the dopamine hit. And so video games would be a way of getting the same dopamine, but you don't have to have the kilojoules and the negative health impacts of alcohol. Like, what am I needing? Why am I feeling the impulse to go and engage in this particular behavior? And is that the ideal option? Or maybe there's a different way that I can meet that need, restore that energy, fill myself up in that way that I've been depleted, whatever it is, restore balance in the way that I'm feeling a bit affected. And I just need to choose strategically, what's the best plan to do that? I recognize that, you know, I'm hungry, I need some food, I don't particularly feel like hanging out with people, and I'm feeling really physically tired. Then it might be something like ordering takeaway and I'm just letting each person go their own way after they've eaten, and that's fine for tonight. And then maybe tomorrow morning's when I spend time with the family, whereas my wife might be in a completely different headspace, and so we'll need to negotiate that. Express your creativity. I think, again, on weekends is an opportunity where we can do some of this stuff. It might be gardening or cooking or music or writing, or maybe it's just rearranging your room, or thinking creatively about an activity that you can do with one of your friends or something like that. And then consider which of the relationships are nourishing for you. All of us have some friends and some family, and they give us different things. They're really fun, for example, but they're not great when we're going through a crisis. Or we've got friends who are really reliable and amazing in a crisis, and they give us practical support, but they're not great when we're feeling emotionally upset, like when we've lost a loved one. They're not the person who I'd go to talk to. In other situations, we've got friends that are really helpful distractions. You know, we can go and do a fun activity, or we like talking about the local football team or something. With other friends, it's more about work, or I have some friends that are really focused on professional development type of stuff. So when I talk to them, I often pick up really good tips on how I can improve my own well-being. Other friends have specialty knowledge around particular areas. So when I'm focused on this particular hobby, that might be a really good person who I can connect with. And then finally, the last part of, I think, a lot of weekends and recovery periods that are often missed and holidays is just quiet. It's just slowing down and being still. I have found meditation myself to be incredibly helpful, just going in a room and being quiet and sitting there for 10 minutes and thinking about, well, who am I and what do I want for my life and how am I traveling and right now what's going on, like in my body, what is physically happening? How's the buildup of stress and what kind of things are pushing my buttons? And what do I want, even in the next couple of hours? What would that look like if I was really aligned with the things that are important to me? And it's just been so helpful then to go out and not be as snappy with my son when he's not having a shower after I've asked him to 9 times, or my wife seems to be distracted when I'm talking about my day, and my natural impulse is to say something like, well, are you even listening? Like, what's the point of me sharing it, you know? Whereas, of course, she's thinking about an email that she's just got, or something that my son has done to annoy her, or figuring out when we're going to order the groceries or something. But when I don't have that space in between my reactions and my initial emotions and what's going on, I just react. And the more quiet, the more stillness that I can build into my regular patterns of my life, but particularly on weekends, when you've got that extended time away from your work or what you normally do, those are often the really powerful opportunities to just stop. It's interrupting our impulse that we always have to be doing something and that we always have to be productive. We're dealing with stress. A lot of us find it challenging to sit still and our body almost wants to stand up and walk away. And just sitting and noticing that, it then translates into other stressful experiences and particularly conflict. I think it's one of the main tools that I've used to improve my own capacity at dealing with conflict. It's still obviously something that I'm working towards, the same as everybody else would be too. But it's not something that is apparent at surface level. And so I think for a lot of people at the moment, just finding the time for quiet and stillness, it's low-hanging fruit. You don't have to invest a lot of time. It's free. You can do it, obviously, and no one needs to know about it in many situations. But the benefits are like exponentially greater, I think, than the amount of time and resources that's needed. The main challenge that we need to overcome is that it just feels so goofy and you never feel like doing it and you always think that it's not going to help. And that doesn't go away, but it always helps. It's just, it might not be as quick and it might not be in the way that you expect it to, but it's interesting just how widespread, to me at least, the benefits of that type of thing can be. So thank you very much for listening. I hope that that has been helpful for you, thinking about some of the options of how to reset after conflict. I've been working on a self-access training workshop, I guess, or course you'd say, on de-escalation skills. It's a 2-hour webinar and I've designed it so that you can complete the training either by yourself in front of your computer, especially if de-escalation skills is something that you do in your work role, or you could watch it with a group. So if you're a small business owner or you're a manager for your team, it's a 2-hour session. It's similar in terms of structure than I use when I'm doing training workshops live, but it's much more efficient because I've practiced and scripted it more carefully and also gone back and re-recorded and edited out the ums and ahs and all that kind of stuff. So that's a really good, I think, return on investment in terms of the time spent. And I haven't decided on the final cost, but it'll be, you know, sort of within the $500 realm type of thing. And so that's much cheaper than I charge when I'm going to do a live training workshop. Even for a 2-hour session, it would be far more than that. So it's also, I think, quite a cost-effective option too. So you got the 2-hour main video. You don't need to click through links and modules and all that kind of stuff. I just find that so distracting when I'm doing online training myself. And then I've got a case study section with 5 different case studies that we go through and I talk about options for responding. And then finally, some additional resources and tools that might be helpful as well. So if that's something that sounds useful for you, you can check out my website, simongood.com. It's SIMONGOODE.com. And I'll have a bit of a pre-launch opening up in the next week or two for listeners of the podcast and some of my existing clients. I'm just going to have a small group of people go through as a little bit of a pilot almost. So I'm going to give them a discount and I'll let them go through, hopefully to get a bit of feedback around anything else that might be needed or any tweaks in terms of the platform, etc. And then I've got a series of podcast episodes coming up actually, looking at some case studies and then elements from the de-escalation skills training that I use too. If it's been helpful, please consider leaving a positive review. And if you're interested in that topic of de-escalation or something else related to conflict, please consider subscribing. Otherwise, thank you so much for listening and all the best managing the conflict situations that you're dealing with over the next week or two, or 3 or 4, depending on how long it takes me to get all of this organized and launched and prepare those podcast episodes. Bye for now.